you know, we're not talking about the difference between a sub and a Speedmaster here. We're talking about the difference between, you know, a Baltic GMT and a FP Jorn mono pusher chronograph. Like, these are like wildly different watches. Hey everybody, I'm your host Stephen Pulverant, and this is Hodinkee Radio. This week we've got a classic watch nerd episode. It's a three-parter. To kick things off, James, Danny, and I are going to sit down to talk about five new releases, or four new releases and one new-ish release, that really caught our attention on the site this week. It's going to be a little bit of a rapid-fire format, and you're going to get everything you need to know about these new pieces from the likes of Breguet and Grand Seiko and Tudor. After that, there's a segment we did in partnership with Timex. I sat down to talk with designer Blaine Halverson, who, along with his company Madeworn, just designed a new watch with Timex as part of their American Documents series. So we're going to get into all of the really incredible artisanal elements of this watch, what makes each piece unique, and how he thinks about the future of American watchmaking. It's a super fascinating perspective and one you do not want to miss. And then after that, you'll get the results of the Independent Watch Fantasy Draft from a few weeks back. Our producer, Gray, joins us for the rare on-mic appearance, counts us down from fourth place to first place, and then we do a little bit of kind of a thought experiment, talking about watches we would have taken, brands we think that should have been better represented. So if you listen to that episode and you want to know the results, as well as a few more thoughts on independent watchmaking, that's a nice way to take us home. So we got a lot to cover this week, so without further ado, let's do this. This week's episode is presented by Timex and the new Timex X Madeworn American Documents watch. Stick around later in the episode for my conversation with Blaine Halverson, the LA-based designer who created the watch, and be sure to visit Timex.com for more. Hey guys, how you doing?
Hey, Steven.
Hey, not too bad. Yourself?
I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good. I get to talk to the two of you guys about watches. So, you know, mornings can be worse.
For sure. Danny is delightful.
Danny is delightful.
Oh, thanks, guys. You guys, too.
Delightful is not something people typically call me. I get called a lot of things. Delightful is not one of them. James is shaking his head,
no,
too.
No.
James and me are not delightful. What I thought we'd do here this morning, there's been a ton going on. We've been super busy as usual, but we're getting kind of the last burst of new watches before everybody takes their summer holidays, and Switzerland, despite having just been shut down for a pandemic, is going to shut down for summer holidays, I'm sure. So I think things are going to get a little bit boring in the new watch world. But I thought we'd come and chat about maybe like five new releases. We'll do it in 15 minutes. Each watch gets 3 minutes. I'm not going to like hit a buzzer and cut you off or anything, but we'll do a little rapid fire of some new releases. That sound good?
Sounds good to me.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's kick things off here with one that, you know, when I got this press release, I was like, oh shit, which is the Zenith Chronomaster Revival Safari. You know, James, maybe you want to give us a little context here about Safari in quotes as like a thing here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's partly due to the color, but also it's become a thing in the automotive world to safari a car. Most recently, the big one is like Lee Keen, who's a very talented Porsche factory driver and endurance race car driver and also video host and the rest of it. He started this, the Keen project, where they take older 911s and put them on bigger suspension with bigger knobbly tires and drive them off road. And the term for that is kind of to safari. It calls back to some stuff from the late 70s and early 80s. And maybe that's what they're pulling at with this one. You know, Danny covered this watch. Maybe it's just that it's green. And when you're on safari, you see green stuff, or maybe it's a little bit of all of that. Cause Zenith does like to dip into the car world and turn, you know, the Land Rover stuff and all that kind of thing. So maybe it is a little bit of just the use of a popular term and a very popular color. I will say it is a very good looking watch.
Yeah, it's really good looking. And the other connection here, and they even Zenith even uses it in the imagery they provided to the press, is the Leica connection, right? Like the Leica Safari cameras with the kind of matte green color.
Right on.
So I think between the automotive and the Leica connection, the customer they're going for here, the sort of like quote unquote like cool guy customer, is kind of primed and ready for this kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it was a color mixed with like to evoke sort of that imagery. I think that's what I got out of it when I was reading it. I will say, just to pat myself on the back, I did coin the term crocodile with this one. I wrote in the piece.
Danny, woof. Oh, man.
I wrote it. It's in there. It's in print. And it had legs on social. It had some legs. People were going with it. They were on board.
There we go. You know what? I'm just glad that Zenith gave you the opportunity to do that. They threw you a hanging slider right over the plate, and you knocked it way over the outfield fence.
We had panda dial, now we have crocodile. I mean, what else do you need?
The other thing here is this is based on the Chronomaster Revival, like quote unquote platform. I can't believe I'm saying that. It's not something I expected, but Zenith's kind of turned this K-shape and this El Primero style into a thing over the last year or two. You know, we got the Liberty Edition, we got the Shadow Edition. I don't know about you guys. I think this K-shape rocks. I love it. And I think this is a really cool kind of like base for Zenith to build on.
I think it's incredible. I was hands-on with the Liberty last year. When I wore that, I was surprised at how small that it wears. And to be honest, it reminds me so much of like wearing like a vintage Datejust or something in terms of its size, which is like not something you ever find in modern watches, but especially not in modern chronograph watches. And for them to have gone like so headstrong and so forward with this like conservative sizing with an incredible chronograph movement is something that I wish other brands took note of.
And in titanium.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, guys. So let's move to the next watch here. We're going to keep this thing moving. We'll go with another sort of fun take on a sport watch, which is the Tudor Black Bay Ceramic. We've gotten various levels of blacked out Tudors to, you know, give Tudor a little bit of a hard time. We've got the Black Bay Black, the Black Bay Dark, and now the Black Bay Ceramic. Am I getting that right? Those are the three kind of like blacked out Black Bays.
There's a Black Bay Chrono for the All Blacks
oh,
as well.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Good call. All right, so Tudor likes the color black. We've established that. Mm-hmm. This watch looks pretty cool. This is one I think, personally, I'd need to see in the metal to like fully appreciate, but what did you guys think?
I mean, I want to throw to James a question first. Is it a dive watch without a loom pip on the bezel?
It's not ISO, no. I believe under, and they recently changed this. It's something that I would like to do a more holistic story on. They're evolving 6425. But no, without a luminous...
Which is the ISO spec for a dive watch, right?
Correct, yeah. And then there's a German DIN spec as well, maybe two of them. And then there's the EAN specs. It's kind of a fun topic, but it's not really fun unless I have a lot of clarity on what they've changed. So I won't dig into it too much. I'm still kind of reading up on it. But under the typical explanation of a dive watch, you would need the pip at 12 to be luminous. So yeah, in some ways it doesn't necessarily hit that mark. Maybe it's kind of like you have a dive watch for a while and you just lose that pip. That happens as well. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think this is an incredible watch. I think they've been doing some really interesting stuff with adding novelties to the Black Bay line, whether it be silver or gold, or the new chronographs I think are really quite lovely. And then now you have a format that's been around for the better part of a decade in one form or another, just rendered in a very modern material. And what kind of gets me is that, you know, you remember that trend in watches, the kind of phantom where it was all black, even the hands and the markers. And so it's hard to read.
Yeah.
They did that, but then it's just the hands and markers that got the loom. So you really get the kind of a middle ground between that sort of phantomy look where you kind of going to have to turn the watch against the light to see the engraving and the bezel and the rest of it. I like it. It's real shadowy. I think it's kind of cool that it says Black Bay on the dial, especially for one that is so very dark in its coloring. And then, of course, who's going to argue with Tudor pursuing Meta certification for their watches? That's fantastic. Good value.
For me, I was surprised when I learned it was not a 58, that they are continuing to push on the original Black Bay.
Same.
Because the Black Bay, the chunky Black Bay, the 41 millimeter Black Bay, it's its own thing at this point. I look at those original watches and I wouldn't really want them to be smaller. I feel like they really just kind of do well on their own. And I'm glad that they didn't just cut that line off. I totally agree with James. From the Meta certification to actually putting Black Bay on the dial, that seems like a small thing to do, but it actually gives a better identity to the watch, where before it felt like it was the name, but more these were supposed to be these heritage pieces that were looking backward and not really concerned with what they were in the present. And finally branding them, you know, properly, I think really situates them, especially since this is such a modern feeling, you know, watch anyway.
Yeah, I totally agree. Last thing I'm going to say before we move on is this watch also has an open case back, but the movement has like a weird kind of cool tone on tone finishing. You should definitely go click the link in the show notes and go check that out on the site. I thought Tudor really made good use of the open case back here. It's maybe the first time I think we've seen from a modern Tudor where there's an open case back, and I think it's the right move. I think it's worthwhile. You really get something out of it.
Yeah, it's a cool view for sure.
All right, let's go to something totally different here. Let's break things up. Danny, you wrote a really great story for the site about the new Tank Musts from Cartier. Love the headline, one Cartier, two Cartier, red Cartier, blue Cartier, and then the deck and green Cartier. So we've got three colors here, red, blue, and green. These watches are so cool. I've always loved the vintage ones. What should we know about the new ones? I haven't seen these in the metal yet.
I mean, what's to know is they've revitalized the idea of being able to buy a Cartier tank at a pretty affordable price and to have fun with it. You know, it still has a quartz movement inside, but with the red, the blue, and the green, it's just the absolute just pinnacle of fun. From a brand that can sometimes seem like a bit, you know, unapproachable, they feel at times for some people to be like dress watch only, and this breaks that up to me. On the one hand, I didn't write this too much into my piece. In terms of like the big brands, this feels like a bit of a fashion watch play in some degree, but I think that also has a lot to do with what we talked about a few weeks ago with case backs, is like some of these things are a way to bring in a broader audience and to bring in new people into the watch world, and to take a name like Cartier, which has a name as big as, you know, as a Rolex, as that same kind of weight, or as an Omega, to allow that to be more accessible both in price, look, and feel. These just are firing on all cylinders to me in that regard.
Yeah. And I mean, pricing, these are a hair under $3,000, right? They're like $2,700.
Right. $2,700. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. I love them. I would very much like to have one. I hope that they kind of expand on this. I would love to see the same colors or maybe similar colors, but in a gold tone case, I think would be pretty special.
Yeah.
Like imagine if it was a gray dial with a little bit of a shimmer to it on a gold case, and then just a nice brown sort of strap with a subtle stitch. I think that would be, that's a lot of watch for $3,000, especially because I think Cartier is really starting to see this pop in popularity as the whole world around steel sports watches, vintage or otherwise, has become like elevated to the point where it's become very difficult for people to experience these things without spending a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
So it's exciting to see a different sort of watch become kind of eminently stylish and at a price point that's just a fraction of what you would spend to, you know, to put a Rolex on your wrist.
Yeah, totally. I guess, you know, which Danny kind of wraps up the story by saying like, you couldn't pick a color. Would it be too weird to get all three? I'm going to go, no, it wouldn't be too weird. But if you had to start with one, James, which color would you add?
Blue. I just wouldn't wear it on the blue strap. I think a tan strap would look great.
Danny?
I definitely lean toward blue when I was writing it. It's the one that I looked at the most was the blue one. I mean, obviously, like that's kind of a cop out because the red and the green are the louder picks. But to me, they definitely fall in the, if you had all three, then since you're cycling through them, then you wear the red and the green. But if I had one, it'd be the blue.
Yeah, I think the blue would be the practical one, but I think the green for me is the standout. I think the green is the kind of like most exceptional of the three, especially because depending on the light, like that dial can almost look black. But when it catches the light, it's like, wow, it's really, really something special. All right, let's keep this rolling. Let's go to another big classic name here. Let's go to Breguet. This is the most recently released watches of this bunch, just came out this week. And these are some new Type 21 chronographs. It's a pair of titanium limited editions, 250 of each one with either green loom or orange loom. They're split seconds. These to me are just like, I don't know. I think the Breguet military chronographs are some of the most underrated watches of all time, maybe. The vintage ones are just unbelievable. The modern ones over the years have gone up and down. But what do you guys think about this watch?
I think it's great. Personally, I'll take any watch that goes full force on preserving vintage feeling typography in terms of like both the overall aesthetic and the numerals. And this one just like,
yeah,
is in your face, like from the super thin bezel to the massive, you know, loomed numerals on the dial to even like the date aperture. You feel simultaneously like you're wearing like a robust modern watch, but you get all that character and all that flavor. And like the Type 20 is the classic military breguet. And there'd be no scenario where I wouldn't like a watch like this.
That skinny bezel is so hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I didn't catch the pricing for these, but 42 millimeters, all titanium, you know, a quality flyback chronograph movement with a decent power reserve, nicely made. I think they look very distinctive with the coloring. The orange definitely speaks to me, but it could be the kind of thing where the green in person would be different than in the render. Green's such a tough thing to judge, whereas orange just kind of feels kind of safe to tell from a photo.
Green to me with like throwback watches always to me feels like a like poorly re-loomed vintage watch, which like is my own bias, but I'm with you. I think I'd go orange on this one.
But yeah, as a huge fan of the Breitling AVI 765, I don't see how you could also not like this. It's the same sort of treatment in many ways, just in this case, to borrow the tiredest of cliches, a pop of color.
I also think what people don't appreciate about these watches is the movements. Like, they're not the ornately finished movement you might find in a, you know, a Breguet dress watch or one of their tourbillons. But with Breguet and with their, you know, sister brand Blancpain, like when you buy these sport chronographs, whether it's this or like a 50 Fathoms chronograph or a Bathyscaphe chronograph or whatever, like you're getting a real serious high-end chronograph movement in these watches. And it's cool to see it in a sporty style titanium case so that you can get that kind of like badass high-end automatic chronograph without having to buy a dress watch, you know?
Yeah, I also like how like the aesthetic in both the green or the orange feels in no way. And we talked about how it might feel like Super Luminova's burned into the dial, but neither of them feel like they're going for some kind of vintage aesthetic. It's just color. It's color for the sake of color,
yeah.
Which is interesting on a watch that's so clearly, you know, calls back to that era, but those colors are working against that in such an interesting way. The contrast is very cool.
I totally agree. All right, last watch up. I kind of cheated here. This watch isn't new. It's like new-ish, last year or two, but it's a watch that when I saw it on the site, Jack wrote a story about it. I was like, oh, damn, I forgot how good this watch is. So that's the Grand Seiko SBGW 259. It's one of the quote-unquote like first reissues. Grand Seiko's done this over the last couple of years. They've released these kind of re-releases of the Grand Seiko first. They're usually limited editions, different sizes, precious metals, blah, blah, blah. They released finally a trio of them into the main collection. And instead of doing one in steel with like a white or a silver dial, they did one in high polished titanium with a blue dial. I have not seen this watch in the metal. You know, it looked plenty handsome from the other photos I've seen. But these photos that Tiffany took this week or a couple weeks ago for the story this week, I feel like I need this watch. Like my life will not be complete until I have this watch at this point. I don't have much more to say than that. But like, damn, the idea of a slim kind of vintage throwback titanium Grand Seiko that's hand wound, like sign me up like every day of the week.
And that pulls off the open case back beautifully. I mean, this is like when the open case back is totally worth it and is really working here. You know, just to go back to that conversation again, it's just like everything about this is minimal, meaning not in the like the sense of the word minimalism, but just to the point where like there's nothing on here that doesn't need to be here.
Yeah.
Which I think is so very on brand anyway. But it just shows how classic design persists. And sometimes we don't need to make all the changes we make when we're designing new watches anyway.
Yeah, but I don't disagree. You know, the thing that stands out to me is probably easily my favorite Grand Seiko is, you know, the 2017 re-edition of the 3180, the 252.
Yeah.
This is now my second. I think I would want the yellow gold with that, you know, beautiful dial and that if it came down to just raw choice. But I mean, it's really beautiful. I love that it has that Chronometra blue thing where you can tell that it's not steel, right? And that's what made that, the Zorn is tantalum, of course, and not titanium. But nevertheless, to get titanium to the point where you can polish it is an art on its own. Ask Dave Batune, ask now G-Shock with their, I can't remember what they call that. It's a fancy type of titanium they're using on a couple models now that they can polish. It's a beast to complete and be able to polish a watch like this, and to do it at a level where the guys at Grand Seiko were like, yeah, this supports everything else that we do, not undercuts our finishing, then I would assume in person this thing wears beautifully.
Yeah.
Great size too, these watches, the 38 mils.
Totally
perfect,
agree.
Because they're all dial.
Yeah. They also nailed the details. And like, that's a big thing, James, right? Like, it's all dial. And so everything has to be spot on. And like, the logo treatment, the way the hands are faceted, the dial furniture, even like the crown, like it has that like old school Seikosha, like little S crown, is awesome. And my single favorite thing, maybe to go back to Danny's comments about the case back, no weird ghosted out logos engraved on the underside of the case back, which is maybe my least favorite thing that Grand Seiko does. Like, either solid case back in an engraving or transparent case back. Don't do the middle thing. Like, just don't do it. It's like you get the worst of both worlds. This is perfect. Like, it's exactly what I would want. So yeah, the watch isn't brand new, but you know, when I saw it on the site this week and was just like, okay. And thought we should talk about it. All right, guys, I think we got five good watches here from five big brands, and we'll link up in the notes if you're, you know, listening to this and you're interested in learning more. We've got tons of good coverage of these watches and similar watches. You can kind of go down a rabbit hole as deep as you want to go. And hopefully we'll be back to talk about a couple more new releases before everything calms down for the final holidays, and then we kick off and it'll be fall before we know it.
Can't wait.
Cool. Great to chat with you both.
Thanks, guys.
Up next, we've got my conversation with Blaine Halverson about the Timex Maidworn American Documents watch. Hey, Blaine, how's it going? Good to have you here.
Good, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. I'm excited to talk about your new collaboration with Timex. Can you maybe, just to get us going, tell us like kind of what the project is and how you first got involved?
They had met me through a process I was doing where I was carving watches and so forth. So they reached out and asked if I'd be interested in potentially doing an American-made watch with them. And being someone who's been a fan and has been making stuff in America for the last 23 years, it was definitely appealing to see what we could do and see how far we'd sort of push the boundaries of American manufacturing, and really just getting an understanding of what is still being done here and what that looked like. So, you know, and Timex obviously having a long history here in the past as well, it was just, it seemed like a really nice sort of marriage of something to do and something that I hadn't done. So it was, that made it appealing also.
Yeah. And the Made in America component of this is really foundational to the project, right? It's not like something you guys kind of arrived at later.
Yeah. I mean, that was the only reason I would have done this. You know, it's been important to me. You know, everything I do at Maidworn is Made in America. It's just been the ethos of what it is. I like being able to be a part and you know, everything that we do is very hands-on. So for me, I needed to be where I could touch and feel and work with everything. And this project gave us the opportunity to really actually be able to make unique one-off pieces, which that was everything to me. You know, I didn't want it to feel like we just, here's some idea, put a name on it. So we played a big role in this, which is what made it exciting.
Yeah. And you touched on the fact that each watch in this collection is unique. So this is the Timex Maidworn, which is part of the American Documents series. But these watches, each one is kind of like touched by human hands and has its own feel. So I wonder, how did you think about, you know, in the early stages of this project, what you could kind of do to make each piece unique?
So they sent me some American document watches, which was great. You know, we started kind of like how we do. I threw some in an actual campfire through burning. We put them through acid baths. We did all kinds of things just to kind of test the steel, test the faces, to see how far we could push the materials, mm-hmm. and what we could do, and really just trying to build patinas and so forth. So it was a lot of how we do it, like a chemistry experiment, which was fun as hell. And you know, we got to a lot of different processes and you know, that watch that we threw in the hot coals, you know, we left that in there about 8 hours and we learned a lot. You know, it handled heat incredible. And for all intents and purposes, it was basically still a working watch. So, you know, when you're talking about something going in hot ash, that's that was pretty impressive. So,
yeah, that's super cool. How did you then, like, through all of this experimentation, you arrived at a handful of processes that ended up being used on these final pieces? Can you walk us through maybe, like, you know, the case, the dial, the hands, and kind of explain what you're doing to each component along the way to make these watches unique?
I took a lot of inspiration on these from some of the early, like, military watches and so forth. This sort of the aging and finishing that happened just from the day-to-day wear on those. The night and day sort of two-tone face of the watch was super appealing to me. This idea of sort of, you know, time never stopping, you know, that you've got creative minds that work best at night and creative minds that work best in the daytime, and just sort of playing around with that idea. Mm-hmm. So just trying to figure out how we could get those patinas and those finishes to look right, from, you know, the platings to getting it to wear so you're seeing some of the brass coming through, and then the straps as well, you know, being done in here, being able to sort of manipulate the leather. You know, we soaked the leather, we put them through a lot of different treatments as well, just to make them obviously much softer and get the folds and bends and the sorts of things that make it look like it's a keepsake. I mean, my first watch from my grandfather was a Timex, you know, that was it back in the day. So that, you know, that idea was cool.
That's great. Yeah. And I like this idea that they are aged to look like they've lived a life, but then the kind of the wearer has to put their own spin on it, right? Like, the wearer has to make it a part of their life.
Yeah. And then they, you know, and then they get to age even more and they get their sort of marks and scars on it as well. So I think that's what makes it.
Yeah, that's great.
Makes it beautiful. Yeah. I mean, it was every ounce of this watch was touched by hand. No two faces are the same. So.
And then the case backs are also special, right?
Case backs are all hand stamped also. So again, you know, a lot of companies are heavily based on manufacturing, obviously, and being able to see how we could add the American human hand into it was awesome, you know, and to me, that's bringing back some of that romanticism of what we saw back from, you know, in the 50s in Detroit, from cars coming off the line. You know, that was, we don't get to see a lot of that anymore in America. And I think opportunities like this are great because we show that we still have the capabilities of actually making beautiful things if we want to.
Yeah. And I know you're also inspired by a lot of sort of, like, traditional American art forms and craft forms, you know, things like tattoos, gun engraving, leather working. How did you think about kind of incorporating those things to kind of, like, mesh with Timex's own history?
Well, listen, you know, I love the whole idea of takes a lick and keeps on ticking, you know? So we were like, let's really test that out. Let's see how much we can beat this thing up and keep it still in its beauty. So that was really the premise of it. I really wanted to sort of push all boundaries. I wanted to push manufacturing boundaries as far as we could to make this thing as unique and as sort of special in this era. You know, it's like to have a fully, you know, manufactured watch that's like every ounce of it has been worked on by hand is a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no corners cut, that's for sure.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't look like it.
And being, you know, it was like, you know, my team being able to work on so much of this, you know, it was like stuff was being sent to us. We would do all of our patina and finishing work on it to it. It would go, you know, back to Timex, and then Timex's team would also do their working on it. And so it was just fun to watch. You know, obviously a watch has a tremendous amount of precision, like things can't warp and so forth. So we work a lot with heat. So it was, you know, it was just interesting watching and seeing how all that stuff works together. And fortunately, and we were able to, you know, I think make a really beautiful piece.
Yeah. You mentioned heat, and I know that the actual box that the watch comes in is pretty special. Can you walk us through that box?
Yeah. So we had a wood box that came to us that the watch actually comes in. Each watch box, probably an hour worth of torching. You know, we got a lot of help from Benzmatic, which is a great flame company. You know, they sent us a bunch of torches to work with. And it was basically trying to bring, you know, all the beautiful sort of aging that fire does, you know, charring of the boxes and all the beautiful lines and things that come from that into each of these boxes.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier the day-night dial, which is something that beyond it being hand-finished and having this unique patina, I think is a really interesting concept. I mean, you talked about creativity, and you know, I've also seen you talk about, you know, the idea of yesterday versus tomorrow and kind of living in the moment. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if anything, this last year gave us, you know, what are you going to do with your time? So, you know, for me, from the creative side, you know, your brain's sort of going 24 hours a day. You know, I wake up every night, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, doesn't matter sort of when I go to sleep. And, you know, that so-called witching hour from 3 to 6 is really when a lot of the stuff that I end up doing comes from. People have documented when their creative times are and how that works. I just think that it's incredibly unique to everybody. And I mean, like I said, the time's not stopping for you. So it's sort of your choice on what you're going to use with it, because that thing just keeps on ticking until it stops.
So of all of the little details on this watch, is there one that stands out to you that's just your personal favorite? Like the one little thing that if you just had to tell somebody one thing about this watch, you'd want them to take a closer look at?
I mean, the face, listen, the unfortunate part is that, you know, you're just getting one watch. For me, the beauty was being able to see all of the faces laid out at once and being able to see truly how unique and different each one was. Because it's one thing, obviously, to make faux, you know, you can kind of faux anything at this point, you know, watch company and be like, we like this one patina, now let's mass produce that same patina a million times. You know, in this case, like every single one of them is uniquely different. Some of them more than others. And that was the beauty, you know, that, a lot of what we did, you just natural world takes over, you know, a second longer under this, second longer under that. You would get spots in certain places and on one and spots in a different place on something else. And to me, that was the most beautiful thing, is actually really, that's what we wanted from the beginning.
Great. Well, thanks so much for sharing this with us. We're going to have links in the show notes so people can go check the watches out and learn a little bit more. But I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I personally can't wait to see one of these in the metal. They're pretty incredible looking. And finally today, we've got the results of the Independent Watch Fantasy Draft for 2021. If you remember, a few weeks ago, we did our Independent Watchmaking Fantasy Draft. And today, we're going to bring you the results of that draft and do a quick little recap of the Independent Watchmakers. So we've got our producer, Mr. Gray Korhonen, on a rare on-mic appearance here. What's going on, Gray?
Yes, indeed. Thanks for having me, Stephen. Good to be here.
And we've got John, we've got Danny, and we've got Cole here, because Gray's going to give us the results live on air. None of us know what the results are, and we'll see what happens.
I'm a little nervous, guys. I'm pretty scared.
I got to be honest, John. I'm a little nervous here, too. I'm not feeling super confident.
Well, I think both of your instincts are right, because I think Danny is probably going to win this one. Just saying.
It would be sheer luck, trust me.
Gray, you wanna just dive into it? Give us the results, maybe a little like 4-1 countdown, and then we'll do a little recap after that.
All right, I will hold you guys in suspense no longer. Let's get straight into it. After all the votes have been tallied, we have in fourth place with a meager 18.5% of the vote, our host with the most, Mr. Stephen Pulverant. Ouch.
Wow.
Oof. Ooh, the host.
I gotta be honest, I didn't think I won this one. I didn't think I was gonna come in fourth place. That's I'm gonna have to take this one on the chin. All right, okay.
SJP doesn't come in last.
But I think of you as like Mr. Independent, though. This is surprising. I don't know.
I'm gonna get that on my business card, John. Stephen Pulverant, Hodinkee, Mr. Independent.
Mr. Independent.
All right, okay. It is what it is. Let's go number three.
All right, moving right along to third place, edging out Stephen by the slimmest of margins is Mr. John Buse with 18.8% of the vote. Third place, Mr. John Buse.
Not good.
John, I think we're getting drinks at lunch.
I think we need to.
It's just us, Cole. Yeah. Just you and me, boy.
I think someone must have tampered with the results here, because I mean,
there's some hanging chads or something. Yeah.
Something's going on. Yeah.
Are you outing yourself, Cole? Was it you?
It wasn't me. It definitely wasn't me. I mean,
I'd appreciate if you guys wouldn't cast aspersions on the validity of this vote. The votes are real and the results are final. With that said, we've arrived at the moment we've all been waiting for. We have Danny and Cole remaining in second place with a healthy 24.5% of the vote is Mr. Danny Milton, which means in first place, we have Cole Pennington, our champion, with a whopping 38.2% of the vote. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Cole.
Mr. Hanging Chad himself, number one.
This is the first Hodiki thing I've ever won. I mean, this has never happened before to me, like winning a Hodiki bracket, whatever. And
speech.
It's in an area that I'm not like super, super confident and familiar with. So this is great news. So thank you to all the good men and women that voted for me. And I promise to make...
Cole's already stumping for the next go around here.
You got to deliver on your campaign promises exactly. For the first one. Yeah.
Congratulations to Mr. Cole Pennington. Thank you all for playing. I leave you guys to dissect the results.
Well, this is great news. So thank you. And congratulations to everyone.
This is interesting. I mean, I think this draft, more than any other that we've done so far, had the possibility to go a bunch of different directions. And part of that is that these watches are so idiosyncratic. Like, most of the watches we picked are pretty, like, directional, shall we say. Like, they appeal to a particular audience. They kind of speak loudly. Like, they're not, you know, we're not talking about the difference between a sub and a Speedmaster here. We're talking about the difference between, you know, a Baltic GMT and a FP Jorn mono pusher chronograph. Like, these are like wildly different watches. And even within individual collections, you know, I'll speak for myself, like having a Roger Smith next to an MB&F, like that's a lot, you know? And I think, I would love to know, and maybe people let us know in the comments, like, I'd love to know if people were voting on whole collection. Were people voting on one favorite watch? Were people voting on the interactions between watches within a collection? It could have gone a lot of different ways here. And so, honestly, no result really would have surprised me too much. These are four good, interesting collections.
I'm still surprised, just for the record.
Let's do a couple things here. I want to first, you know, when we finished this draft, you know, the moment the mics kind of cut and we were all chatting about it, there were a bunch of brands and a bunch of watchmakers who got left off this list. And that was kind of inevitable. You know, we're picking 16 watches here. We weren't going to be able to pick everyone, but I thought it might be interesting to go around and see who everybody thought was the watchmaker that they were kind of like most disappointed got left off the list. You know, maybe we'll start with Cole. We'll start with the champion here. Cole, who were you surprised didn't make it into one of these collections, or who were you disappointed didn't make it into one of these collections?
I tend not to get disappointed about stuff like this. You know, don't cry over spilled milk. However, I will say I was surprised not to see Ming mentioned by anybody, given how much they dominate the narrative around indie watches right now. So it's kind of, yeah, overall, are they in the pantheon of great indie watchmakers? I don't know if they're there yet. I don't think so. But comment sections, Instagram, kind of the conversation now, you'll be hard-pressed not to see Ming brought up at least once or twice in most conversations. So yeah, I was kind of surprised not to see them make an appearance.
Yeah, I would agree. I really thought that would be someone's choice. I mean, I will say they come in just above the budget limit that we set for the budget pick, which I think is where maybe they would have fallen, but a lot of their watches end up falling like, you know, $100 too high. So I wonder if that was a factor. But Danny, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I was assuming that Cole was going to pick Oris at some point when we did this. That was one that I think I saw in the comments. People were surprised didn't make it. And I would have picked one. I think I'll save this for later in the conversation. But it was a brand that definitely felt missing. I think part of the reason might be in our circles, it's very prevalent and maybe doesn't strike us like fully in the same way as an independent. But it's, you know, in normal non, you know, insider watch circles. You know, Oris isn't super well known, and it is very much still an independent in the watch world.
That's fair. Yeah, that's a really good point. I had an Oris or two on my short list. Did anybody else have any kind of waiting on their short list?
I did.
Same. The Pro Pilot X was on my list too.
Yeah. All right, that's interesting. John, how about you?
Well, I mean, I think for me, it was Akrivia. I was really surprised not to see that brand pop up on our list. And I think somebody even mentioned them, that they were not going to pick them and go for something else first.
Steven,
I think, yeah, you mentioned them. And then I was, after that happened, after you like broached the topic, I thought for sure someone would jump in and scoop you on it, but it didn't happen. And somehow to me, the list of watches that we all put together feels like it missed a major kind of moment in independent watchmaking over the last, 5 or 6 years by not including anything from Akrivia.
That's why Steven lost. Yeah. That's what did it.
Honestly, it might be. All right. I'm going to hedge here and go with two. I'm going to go with kind of the opposite of John. You know, John went here with kind of the newcomer to the high end, independent watchmaking. I'm going to go with two standbys, Philippe Dufour.
Oh yeah. Wow.
And Kari Voutilainen.
Yeah.
I'm kind of shocked that neither Kari nor Philippe made it onto this list. You know, again, we only could pick 16 watches here, and only four of those were, you know, high end dress watches. So I get it, but yeah, again, just a little bit surprised there. To drill a little bit more down into specifics, we've touched on our short lists. But I want to know, and you don't need to provide too much of an explanation, but a little bit would be nice. Let's go in the same order. And if you could add one more watch to your collection, just a fifth watch, it doesn't need to meet any category requirements or anything like that. You just get a fifth watch. What is that watch going to be?
The limited edition Grunfeld we did for Hodinkee. That watch. But you also know that watch that Eric Koo has that says made exclusively for Eric Koo on the dial?
Yeah, the Kikuchi Nakagawa.
Exactly. So what I would like to do is a Grunfeld in the spirit of the Hodinkee LE, which would be covering the Remontoire, say with made for Cole Pennington on the dial somewhere very subtly. I think that would just be a little over the top, but why not? We're adding another. This is a fantasy draft, right?
So the watch Cole wants is a true fantasy. It's a watch that doesn't exist.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
I'm going to balance things to go from high to low, just to keep things even. And since Oris was my pick of what I felt was left off, I'm going to pick an Oris, just because what I ended up doing in mine for the sport watch category was going for Moser, which in theory at the price point doesn't exactly jive with the category. So to sort of balance that out, I would have picked the Oris Diver 65. I think Cole actually has this watch, the 42 millimeter version with the that recycled plastic strap, which is an awesome. It's such a cool watch. The yellow and blue strap with the blue dial on the watch just looks amazing. I've always wanted it, and maybe I'll get it one day. But I would have picked that probably in the sport watch category.
Good choice.
That's a great choice. John, how about you?
I mean, if I could add one more watch, I probably would have done something from Philippe Dufour. Now that you mention it, actually, could I have a Simplicity? Does the fact that that's done, does that kind of?
Yeah, you can take a Simplicity,
right? I mean, I feel like it's even if the rules forbid it, it doesn't really, it's going to be very hard to get one of those anyway. But yeah, I'd probably add that.
I'll keep things easier. I'm going to go with the Chronomet Contemporain from Akrivia. I struggled. I could only take that or Roger Smith, and I went with Roger, but I would add something from Recep to the collection here. Maybe if I could, the one from Only Watch, the one with that kind of like frosted blue dial. Mm. It's a hot watch. All right, well, to wrap things up here, let's go back to the draft collections, and I want to know which watch from someone else's collection are you most jealous of? And it doesn't have to be a one-to-one swap for your watch, just like of all the, you know, watches drafted that weren't yours, the 12 other watches, which watch would you most want? This time around, let's just go in the same order to keep things simple. Cole, what would you pick from the other watches?
I think I actually hinted at this during the draft. And do you know which one it is, Steve?
I don't.
I voted for you.
Based on this watch. I do know what you're taking.
Yeah.
I do know what you're taking. You're going to take the SUF 180 field watch from Michael.
That's right. That's what I'm taking, because that's one I would happily wear. Like, and I actually went through the mental exercise of, hey, should I buy this watch, or is it a little too redundant given that I have another field watch? But is it really cool to have a field watch that's an indie? Yes. And I'm picking it from your collection. And I did vote for you. I'm just saying.
Thank you, sir. To no avail, my friend.
So there we go.
Danny?
Yeah, Steven, I'm coming for your collection also. I think I had like an audible reaction when you picked this one, because it was my choice at the category, but it was the Nomos Club Campus. It's just such a, at the price and what it represents, it's the kind of watch that I would recommend to anyone getting into watches, which is part of the reason why I picked it. And it being an independent just makes it so much cooler for what it is. When you said it, I was just gutted. I forget what I picked to replace it, but you crushed my soul.
Wow.
Sorry, Danny. Again, to no avail. Let's be clear.
Yeah, we're all picking the losing collection. Is actually somewhat hilarious. Yeah,
we're having a little loser party here. It's I appreciate it, but you guys are not helping your cases here.
I'm going to continue the tradition of coming after Steven's watches by selecting his Roger Smith Series 1, because, I mean, come on. I mean, there are many, many great watches that we all picked in this collection. I could pick something from Danny's or from Cole's as well. However, the Roger Smith Series 1, I mean, if you can have that watch, you kind of, like, if the opportunity presents itself and you can afford it, I feel like it's something that you kind of, like, have to do. And so if we're playing a fantasy game where I get to pick any of these, 16 watches, that's the one that I'm going to take. I mean, just the level of craftsmanship is like beyond, the fact that Roger Smith has been doing this for as long as he has, and he still hasn't even made a watch for himself yet. I mean, it's just the story behind it is really something else.
All right. I got a kind of hard choice here. You know what I'm going to take? I'm going to take a watch from John's collection. I'm going to take the Jorn Chronograph Monopoussoir Rattrapant, mostly because it is just so damn weird and I love it. I think I wrote a story after this watch came out about how if you had told me that my favorite watch of SIHH, A, wouldn't be from the show, and B, would be a 44mm platinum chronograph with a purple dial, I would have laughed you out of the room. But the year this watch came out, that was the case. It's a completely insane watch. It's so over the top, but every little bit of it is executed just like to the nines. It's a truly, truly exceptional piece of watchmaking. Mm. And it's the kind of watch that like only an independent would make. Like none of the big brands would ever make a watch like this. It would have gotten focus grouped out and whatever, market researched out. But when you're an independent making small quantities for dedicated collectors, you can do stuff like this. So that's going to be my pick.
It's a good pick.
Well, thanks for doing this, guys. Congrats to Cole.
So weird.
Whatever the opposite of congrats is to me, shame. Am I like not allowed? Do I get like relegated? Am I not allowed to participate in the next draft? I don't know. You've won here.
So many of these, though. So that's all right.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. It's okay.
And the three of us just picked your pick. So that's got to be worth something.
Yeah.
That's definitely worth something. I'm going to take that one with me. And then, John and I will go get a cocktail at lunch and commiserate.
Sounds good.
Thanks for doing this, guys, and looking forward to the next draft.
Thanks, Steven.
Cheers, SJP.
Awesome. Talk soon.
Later, guys.